As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
Today's episode of the Rocket Ship Podcast is brought to you by Desk Hub. Desk Hub is an awesome co-working space with locations all around the country, from Atlanta to Portland, Salt Lake City, San Diego, and Scottsdale. They're growing like crazy and may be coming to a city near you, and I would highly recommend checking them out. It's where we work here in San Diego, and we absolutely love it. They're also generously offering $100 off your first month. All you have to do is mention this podcast. With no commitments and flexible options, there's no reason not to check them out today. Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. I'm Joelle Goldman, and I'm here today with Jay Chernikoff, live at Desk Hub, and he is the founder. Jay, welcome.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here. Filming, talking, podcasting live from Desk Hub in Little Italy in San Diego.
Yeah, this is fun. We don't do too many in-person interviews, and it's always fun when you get to get in the same room. So let's just jump right in. I'm curious kind of why you started Desk Hub in the first place and what got you thinking about kind of solving this problem of co-working and building community.
Sure. So, you know, my background is a little bit in real estate, a little bit in technology, just sort of being entrepreneurial. And one of the things I was seeing is I grew up in Cleveland, lived in LA for a little bit, lived in New York for a while, and ended up, spending a lot of time, in other cities, including Scottsdale and Phoenix area. And, you know, when you see those places, there's tons of smart people around. But what you don't see is sort of a general hub for those people to get together and a place for entrepreneurs, small business, all those types to really sort of create a mini San Francisco or a mini New York, the atmosphere that you want from You know, the reason people are in those places, New York and San Francisco, when you're in a coffee shop in San Francisco and you tell people that you have a startup, people are like real jazzed for you. Where you still, you know, still in other markets, you tell people you have a startup or you're doing your own business, you know, people are like, oh, you lost your job, you know? And so you get into that whole idea of like, you know, what's the mentality around entrepreneurship, around doing your own thing, about being creative and, you know, really wanting to encourage that in some of these sort of, these ancillary markets, markets that weren't, again, New York, San Francisco markets, where you could go outside, walk on a stand on a street corner and, you know, meet a gazillion interesting people and really find that support and network that you need to be a successful entrepreneur.
That's really interesting. You know, when you think about cities kind of outside of tech hubs and what you said, you know, oh, did you lose your job? It's more of like a mentality. But what I find interesting is the concept of walkability. So you talk San Francisco, New York, and you can go stand on a street corner and bump into a bunch of other people who are doing something similar to you. A lot of that just has to do with physical spaces and being in proximity to a lot of people. So I'm curious how that kind of played into what you are building in places like Scottsdale, and Phoenix is just a huge, expansive city for anybody who's been there, and a lot of other places where you have to get in your car and drive really anywhere you want to go.
So the interesting part, I think, is this whole idea around, you know, I like to say that when I was in New York, I saw more people going down the elevator in the morning from my apartment than you'll see in a whole day of driving around in your car in a place like San Diego or Scottsdale. And so, you know, what you're really trying to do is create the sort of right-sized community of people that can sort of aggregate in one place. And again, there's, you know, with sprawl and all the different things that happen, you really want to really focus on what your location looks like, trying to be central to the people who are sort of, you know, the people who are going to be part of that community. But at the same time, there's got to be an acknowledgement that there's a different aggregation of people. And so bringing those people together in a convenient location is critical. And, you know, thinking about the logistics of how that would go and how it works is just, it's very different than in a, you know, one of the most of the major tech hub, sort of traditional major tech hubs.
Yeah. So what kind of things do you look for when you're putting together a new location and kind of even just a physical space, not just location in terms of what city you're going to, but where in that city and where people tend to congregate who would use a space like this?
Sure. So, you know, I think it depends on the market and where we are. You know, if you think about a market like San Diego, where there's so many sort of different areas and sub-markets, you want to really, you know, think about factors that, you know, everyone would think about. You want to think about traffic. You want to think about where people are, where there's a lot of ready supply of housing, you know, what the office availability looks like, and, you know, what kind of space is available. And you sort of have to find that really, you know, there's never a perfect mix, but you need to find, you know, as close as you can to a good mix of all of those different variables that will drive, literally drive people coming to you. So, you know, there's the aspect of, you know, figuring out how you're going to build community, how you're going to build companies, or do you want to be around where the founders are going to be? Do you want to be where the employees are going to be? Do you want to be around where there's a lot of, you know, individuals, and, you know, how do those people sort of come together? So, you know, looking at that, I mean, we typically like to find spaces that can house between 100 and 200 people, with the idea being that it's big enough that if you don't like someone, you don't have to see them all the time, but it's small enough that you can, you know, if you see someone out, you recognize people, you understand who's on the street, you know, if you who's in the space, you can smile at them, you can say hello, you can build that network and that connectivity. There's a familiarity. But not so much that, you know, we like to remind people that, you know, you don't have to remember when there's enough people, it's not a big deal if you don't remember everyone's name, you know, like sort of there's some flexibility in having big space, in that way. So that 100, 200 is really the sort of variable that we think is really critical as far as building network and building community and thinking about the idea that, you know, everyone's got, if you assume everyone's got five good contacts, you know, that 100 to 200 person space really puts you in connection to 500 or 1,000 most likely very interesting entrepreneurial smart people who are doing stuff, if you go on the assumption that smart people hang around smart people.
Yeah, and I have to say that I was blown away at the demand for this. I walked by this space when it was under construction and heard there was a co-working spot coming in. I didn't know it was Desk Hub. And we kind of waited and waited for construction to be done, and then when it was freshly open and just a few people were in here working, I popped my head in and I saw, you know, basically 200 empty desks and was like, oh geez, how are they going to make this work? And like 3 weeks later, I came back in and this place is like almost full. It's so cool to see how many people are just like rushing in here to be a part of this. And it feels so organic. It's just really exciting to see.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what we're going for, is the idea that, you know, people will come together, whether they're an individual person working on their own project or they're a company, you know, that's, you know, at 7 or 8 people, is this idea that, you know, everyone's coming together, you're sort of being more productive, you're sort of, everything just, you know, if you get it right, everything just clicks the same way in any kind of relationship, is sort of putting those pieces together and watching them come together. There'll be, you know, there'll be some trips and slips along the way, but, you know, everything sort of works out. And if you get the right people in the right mix, you know, people are sympathetic at the right times, you know, they're understanding of certain things that happen, but you really start to build a community of people that, you know, start to know each other and think about what each person is doing and really driving each other's business and making everyone more productive. I mean, one of the things we really push about a spot like this is that, while on first blush, it's an expense to be in here, that if you really are able to sort of operate in the space and network and connect and are friendly, you know, you should at least be able to move this from sort of, you know, if you think about it in a, you know, P&L kind of way, from a real estate expense to a marketing expense. And if you're really good at what you're doing, you really probably can make money from being in here. So, you know, it can really sort of flip on its head what the value of space is for someone who's running a company and starting a business.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I kind of want to go back to what we were saying before about really building a community and having people interact and kind of get to know each other. And in a space of about 200 people, it can be hard. You know, you can walk in that front door every day and keep your head down and never really get to know anyone. And I'm curious how you kind of build community and run each of these spaces with certain staff members to foster kind of cross-pollination and people meeting and really create a culture here rather than just a place to put your computer.
So the interesting part about, you know, people coming to a space like this is the idea that you can create or put together what you want it to be. So if you want to be a person who comes here and puts their head down, you can be that. You know, I think we're not going to ever force people to be social or to network. You know, that's, again, that's a function of you deciding to how you want to run your business and what you want to do, and if you see the value in doing it. But what we really do try to put together is we try to make as many opportunities as possible for people to meet each other, to sort of understand what's happening. We do lunch and learns. We do events. We have an events calendar. We try to do as many things as possible, you know, even from the snacks in the break room, to get people to get off their, you know, get off their butt and, you know, get in, get moving and sort of bump into people. We do a lot of open desk. The reason we do that is because we want people to bump into each other. We want to have interaction. And so from that perspective, we want to we encourage as much interaction as people want on the days they want it. And, you know, if you see someone with their headphones in, maybe you don't bother them that day. But when you see them in the break room and they're getting a coffee, you can have a chit chat and see what they're doing. But, you know, we do a lot of proactive things, but we also do things where, you know, we act as sort of, you know, a concierge, I guess, if you will. You know, we call our people who, we call the people who run our spaces community curators. And, you know, they're really curating the community and understanding who's coming in. And, you know, for Joelle, if they know that you're doing a podcast and there's someone else who's doing a podcast, you know, there's probably, from a business standpoint, maybe not what it perfect, but maybe they can talk to you about what tools they're using to sort of promote their podcast. Or if there's someone who's doing something interesting entrepreneurial and they know that you're looking for people to do, you know, be on your podcast, they can put you together. You know, the same thing if someone's looking to have a website built or they need a programmer or all these different things, sort of as we understand what people are doing, we sort of act as a facilitator of those things. And, you know, as we get more people in the community and as we continue to, you know, refine the tools, both online and offline, we can do for, you know, for networking, there's a myriad of opportunities to put people together that are partially based on our work and frankly, partially based on what the community is willing to do, you know, as actionable things.
When Rainn Wilson realized he had a special gift for talking people to sleep, he had two choices: construct a massive speaker that would blast his voice to every person in the country, or invent a talking pillow. AT&T Business eventually talked him into the pillow thing. And backed by a reliable network, the only network with built-in security controls, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your ideas to the moon and beyond at business.att.com. That's business.att.com. This episode is brought to you by Yahoo Finance. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? With Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views with multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. Honestly, this has been a lifesaver for me. I've used Yahoo Finance to consolidate all of my various 401k and investment accounts so I can see everything all in one place. And it makes it incredibly easy to manage. So if you're struggling with that, check out Yahoo Finance. For over 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart a great investor, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures that you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. So go to yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination.
Do you see a big difference in kind of the culture and the way things flow in each office, city by city?
That's a good question. I think there's definitely some differences in, you know, what teams look like, you know, how, what spaces have more small business versus entrepreneurial businesses, which spaces end up having, you know, a more dominant presence of, you know, individuals or freelancers. And, you know, each area tends to get a little bit dictated by, you know, who's running the space. There's a little bit of community dictated out of who the first people into the space are. And, you know, and then sort of it's very malleable. You know, the nice thing about co-working and one of the challenges as from a business standpoint is that, you know, it's a very short-term commitment if you want it to be. You know, people can stay years, but people can come for a month if they need to. So, you know, the opportunity to reinvent is always there. It's a constantly changing community, people coming in and out. And so, you know, as things grow and work and don't work and change and all those kind of things, you know, I think you continue to see, you know, those things adapt and, you know, and I think it's just each space just develops its own personality and, you know, that personality is always changing.
So what are some of the bigger changes you've seen from when you opened your first location to now you've got, what, half a dozen?
Yeah, we've got five and we'll be opening a sixth.
So I'm sure, you know, along the way, there's been something different at each one. Looking back all the way at the beginning to where you are now, what are some of the biggest things that stick out in terms of the evolution of co-working?
You know, there's a couple of moving pieces. Like, you know, from our perspective, you know, the way the awareness of co-working and the ability to come in and, you know, rent space by the desk and say, you know, I have a team of four and we're going to be seven next month and all of a sudden we're five again, and sort of having that flexibility is something that I think people are really starting to embrace, but also frankly just know about. So, you know, there was an awareness gap at the beginning that's really starting to be solved. As people start reading more about this, you know, thinking about the sharing economy, you know, even if you think about Uber or Airbnb, you know, along those lines, I mean, people are much more comfortable not necessarily owning private space, renting private space. And so we've really just seen a really nice transition of people. It's become much less of a sales pitch to get people to understand why they should work in the open and why they should work sort of in a collaborative way than it, you know, than it had been. And that people are, so there's more talking about our space and what we offer and less explaining what co-working is I think been the biggest transition.
So what excites you the most about moving forward?
I mean, I think from a standpoint of, you know, what we're seeing as far as being able to offer this kind of space to people is really encouraging small business entrepreneurship, startup activity, you know, all over the country. You know, thinking about that you don't have to be in San Francisco or New York to be in an entrepreneurial environment, to grow your business, to be smart about, you know, what your costs look like, you know, and just there are entrepreneurs everywhere. And, you know, the challenge of a lot of these, you know, drivable cities versus walkable cities is that it's often hard to find those people and to find the encouragement around them. And so, you know, if we can continue to grow and aggregate those people in these cities, especially as they move away from higher cost markets, You know, prices in San Francisco and New York have gotten, you know, astronomical. You know, the ability to start a business with little capital is much easier in some of these other spots. So if you can provide a lot of the same resources and access, albeit on a smaller scale, there's a really interesting opportunity, not only for us, Desk Hub as a business, but for the entrepreneurs that we work with and support.
So as that learning curve has lessened and demand for these kind of spaces grows, how do you test a new city that you might want to enter? And do you find that current cities that you're in are demanding more than one location?
So, you know, I think there's a couple different ways to look. I mean, there's some of the obvious ways that, you know, people would look in any business. You know, if you were doing, you can do some easy searching on, you know, on Google and, you know, look and see what demand looks like for searches for co-working and things like that. But there's also a lot of that sort of anecdotal stuff about, you know, what entrepreneurial activity looks like, what a meetups have in them or on them that, you know, is there 40 meetups or is there 12 meetups? Is there, you know, does the entrepreneurs group attract 12 people or 400 people? And sort of seeing what that demand looks like in a sense of, where do we feel like the market is for entrepreneurs? And what is that, you know, can we create a community that's not just real estate, but is additional value, is network, is offline LinkedIn, and getting people to sort of drive and grow where, you know, where it is they've chosen to, you know, to live and, you know, to live and work. And as far as, you know, multiple locations, there's definitely that demand. It's just a question of, again, this whole, especially in the markets we're talking about, what does drivability look like? What are sort of the different pieces that are significant in that, as far as, you know, what is it, a 10 mile radius? Is it a 20 mile radius? You know, what does the traffic look like? Where are the freeways? What's office demand look like? There's a lot of real estate factors and there's a lot of people factor that go into it.
So with the ability to be that flexible, what's your turnover like? I mean, do you see a lot of people sticking around for the long term, or is it kind of like a constant revolving door?
So I think what you end up seeing now, and it's actually been interesting to us, we haven't seen very much turnover, knock on this table, but the moving piece typically is people who like it will like it. So if you're going to lose people, you lose them pretty quickly, or because they're going somewhere or took another job or moved, or so there's a physical something that happened, or they just don't like it. There's a handful of people who just don't like it. They are not happy getting out of their house. They don't like, however, even if they're a small business, that they don't like being in the shared space. They just don't take to it like anything else. But for the most part, we see a lot of people who stay for a long time. I mean, this type of business, when you look at it, a per desk price versus taking your own office, putting aside the amenities and having more space and all the different sort of ancillary benefits, from a pure cost standpoint, it typically makes sense to be in a space like this almost up to 12 or 15 employees, depending on your alternative, just from the flexibility, from, you know, paying per desk and the amenities and headache that you get as you sort of understand how your business is going to grow. So there's, putting aside all the great things about being in here, there's an excellent value proposition for people to utilize this space and, you know, to understand what their growth looks like of their business, the trajectory of what they're doing, how they manage their headaches. So it might make sense that this costs them an extra $500,000 a month, but they don't have to worry about their internet. They don't have to worry about their furniture. They don't have to worry about a commitment. You know, they don't have to worry if the electricity is working. There's a myriad of things that we take off your plate. So again, it's this idea of, you know, your real estate as a service and providing it to you in a way that's easy and efficient and explainable.
Have you seen the way that you work change as you've spent more and more time in more of a co-working space versus, I'm assuming what you were doing before was more traditional?
So the irony of what I like to say about me running a co-working business and working with the people who actually work with me is that it's actually much more difficult to work in a co-working space because everyone, as you know, everyone knows what you're doing and they want to make a chit chat and do all that kind of stuff. So I actually, ironically, find that it's very difficult for me to work in a co-working space, or my own co-working space at least. I sometimes like to go to other people's co-working spaces to work so that I can get some more work done. But it definitely has changed the way I perceive work and the perceive sort of, I'd worked a lot out of my house and I'd worked a lot sort of alone. And you know, and the idea of, you know, having all these people around who are doing disparate things has become, I mean, it's just, it's fascinating to me. I mean, even the ability, if you even think back to your days in college of like being at the library, like it was so much easier to study at the library than in your dorm room. Even though sometimes it was noisier, sometimes there was distraction, sometimes there was, you know, the idea of being at the library, people have made that commitment to be working and working hard, hopefully, you know, makes such a big difference. So, you know, the idea of not knocking off at 5:01, but staying until 7 or 7:30 or 10 o'clock at night, you know, there's always people around and there's always motivation of people who are frankly working smarter than you, harder than you, better than you. And so that idea of, you know, not necessarily in a competitive way, but just seeing people around. So, you know, it really, it makes a huge difference to be around people and to see what other people are doing. And, you know, hearing the guy next to you make a sale, you know, it's motivating, right? That guy who was struggling yesterday, now he just raised $1 million. And so, you know, there's this whole aspect of just being around people, understanding what they're doing, how what they're doing interacts with you. You know, it just, it's again, putting aside when you run the business of the co-working, I found it to be amazingly productive, and it just, it's a really awesome, awesome environment to be in.
Yeah, I can definitely attest to that. You've heard me mention on the show before, you know, Matt and I work together and often work from home, and getting an office space like this is a game changer for us because it's separation between work life and home life, for one thing, but the ability to come in here and just focus for that chunk of hours we're here, and then be able to go home and just relax and, you know, watch some TV, read a book, whatever we want, and not feel like we have to have our laptops in our lap the whole night is really life-changing. And for anyone else who's been working at home for a while or has experienced a change like this, I'm sure you can relate. It's really something special.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I think is so interesting is, you know, as we, you know, as everywhere gets, you know, more expensive on rents and people think about, you know, becoming entrepreneurs and how they can get out on their own, you know, this becomes a really interesting alternative too for people who, you know, would normally have gone and gotten a 2-bedroom, 2-bath apartment, and then they would basically use the other one as a home office. It's not that fun to get out of bed and walk across the hall. Now, there's a lot of nice things about it. You're not commuting, you're not in traffic, but there's something not productive about staying in your pajamas all day. And, you know, if you're really trying to commit to being an entrepreneur and being out, being around other entrepreneurs, other people who are going, you know, seeing, you know, we have a company in here in the San Diego space, Greek Rush. They came in here, they were 3 and now they're 7. And they're just growing like crazy and they're doing great. And to see them and see them grow and adding team members, and I mean, they're grinding. These guys are putting the beanbags in their office and they're sleeping, you know, because they're taking breaks and working overnight. And so, you know, you see that and you're like, oh, you know, maybe what, you know, maybe getting into the office for 8:30, you know, when you were starting to roll out of bed at 8:30 and roll in the next door to go to your home office in pajamas, it changes the sort of ethos of work to sort of understand being out, creating some work, you know, live work delineation, and, you know, really understanding how, you know, as you grow your business from 1 to 2 to 3, you can have that flexibility of understanding, you know, what that looks like to be out of your house, not in the garage, not having it at the kitchen table, and all those kind of things.
So educate me a little bit on how finding office space works and kind of the economics between when you would want to get your own private space and when it makes sense to work in a co-working space.
So one of the interesting things about co-working is that it's a really easy and flexible way for people to grow their teams and to sort of start thinking about what their office space needs are. So for anyone who's never looked for office space, you know, it's an onerous process. People aren't that excited about helping you, as brokers aren't that excited about helping you with 500 or 1,000 square feet. The landlords aren't that excited about a brand new tenant with no credit who, you know, has a business that may or may not be smart and may or may not be around in 6 months, let alone the 5-year term of a lease. And you think about it from your own perspective. I always like to joke, no one's aspirational to call their parents and say they got 500 square feet. You know, it's a difficult spot in the market. So one of the things that this co-working sort of movement has helped to solve as well is this idea around, you know, easy access to space for companies that would normally have a whole lot of headache around it. And so the idea around co-working is that, you know, as you grow your business from you and a co-founder, or, you know, you and one other team member, and you start thinking about what your options are, there's a lot of moving pieces to it. There's the costs, there's the sort of pure logistical pieces of it, the headache involved in getting internet and signing contracts and getting a lawyer to review your lease. And then, you know, the framework of what obligations you're taking on, right? I mean, you've already taken on so much to be an entrepreneur, to then take on the commitment of a long-term lease and not understanding if it's what your business is going to need now or in the future. You might need to relocate your team. There's a gazillion different things that could happen. So the real interesting thing about co-working is that even though, you know, when you, it becomes a really, it's a great value in the end from a standpoint of all the different headaches it saves. But even on a dollar per square foot standpoint and like thinking about leasing, it's also a great proposition. So, you know, it depends on the market you're in and, you know, what you would be taking as an alternative. But for most people, between 12 and 15 people, it's still a really good value to be in a co-working space. If you think about, you know, the amount of space you would need to take per person to have a conference room and a break room and all of these different amenities that you end up getting in a co-working space like Desk Hub, you know, you end up needing a significant amount of space that's sort of oversized for the small team that you're working on. So what if you really back into all your math and you think about getting internet service and all those things, you know, it really is a, it's a really great solution that has, just like the cloud has really changed, you know, way people do programming and way people build apps and the way people store what they're going to store and don't have to buy resources, can start companies so cheaply. This is another piece of that puzzle.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense because, you know, our generation especially, we're used to cutting out the headaches, right? Like, we don't want to deal with getting our own internet and phone system set up and like all the logistics you mentioned when you're getting your own space, aside from the fact that it's usually a very big commitment. But I think, you know, in addition to that, driving this big movement of co-working on the rise is the fact that it's never been easier to start a business. So you've got all these first time or maybe not first time, but still early stage companies giving it a go. And, you know, there's no reason to make these big commitments in the beginning. And so I totally see this kind of global shift on the rise because it's just so easy to give it a shot.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fascinating thing right now about being an entrepreneur or about just whatever, you know, whether it's technology or a food business or a clothing business, whatever you have a passion for, you can do now in a way that you couldn't. Whether it's putting your crafts on Etsy or selling on eBay, there's an amazing opportunity to sort of, whether it's a one-person business or a 100-person business you turn into, to be an entrepreneur, to grow a business, and all of the resources out there, again, whether it's the cloud from Amazon or whether it's, you know, a space at Desk Hub, the sort of ability to sort of grow and grab these resources quickly and, frankly, for you, everyone out there, but not for us, you know, the ability to be flexible, right? The ability that you can come in for a month, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You know, that whole idea around continuing to have opportunities to grow, change, be flexible, to pivot, if you will, is just, it's a tremendous opportunity to do things cheaply, easily, smartly, you know, as we move forward.
Do you predict any kind of major change in how people work and get office space on kind of a large, impactful scale?
So I actually think I think co-working's right now at the forefront of a fundamental shift in how people are going to be working in the future, and that includes big companies. I mean, there was just a big article, Citigroup, I believe was in New York, has just torn down all the walls in their office and gone to open office. It's incredibly more efficient from a cost standpoint, but it's also, it's collaborative. It's what people want to do. Is if you're going to be at the office, you know, with technology the way it is, you can do most of what you would do at the office at home now. So space becomes a lot more about the interaction, about the collaboration, about the work that's getting done, you know, together versus the work that's happening, versus just the work. So, you know, I think you're continuing to see people and companies taking different amounts of space than they used to. It's just, there's going to be a full on shift that's already begun. In, I think, you know, in 10 years, we'll see almost all offices built out in some way like co-working, whether that's hot desking, whether that's open space. A lot of the stuff that we're seeing and learning now that we're at the forefront of, we being the movement of co-working around the country and around the world, is going to end up sort of transitioning into the majority of companies in the future.
So do you collaborate with other co-working spaces to kind of elevate and accelerate this shift?
There's a lot of collaboration around spaces. There's a bunch of organizations that bring people together around co-working, meaning other co-working spaces. So typically in markets where there's multiple co-working spaces, those people do have some collaboration. There's definitely competition, but you know, I really believe that co-working is going to turn a lot into more like the hotel industry, where you know, you might really like staying at the Westin and I might like staying at a W. Right. And so there's going to be, well, everything's competitive. And certainly you would look at Westin versus the W when you look at hotel rates and where they are and where they're located. You know, there's a lot of stuff that comes down to location and convenience. There's a lot of stuff that comes down to, you know, what are you comfortable with? You know, do you want to be in more open space? Do you want to be with an older crowd? Do you want to be with mostly freelancers? Do you want to be with small teams? And so, you know, as we talked about before, this idea of what does it look like to sort of, how does a space develop, right? So a space develops a personality. I think Desk Hub as a brand will continue to develop personality. And, you know, all the other people who are doing this continue, whether they have one or whether they have 100, will develop brand around what they want to do. You know, I think they'll start to be niche spaces for financial services people. It's the idea of bringing people together who are accretive to value with you. And so, you know, there's certain people who might not make sense for a Desk Hub space, but make a lot of sense for a competitor space. And, you know, those are the kind of things where we're happy to send them through or back or whatever the case might be. So, you know, I think there's, well, in any business, there's competition. You know, I don't think there's, from what we've seen so far, you know, it's not cutthroat in a way that, you know, there's an understanding that there's space for everyone because everyone's sort of developing a niche. And if you don't develop a niche, I think you probably don't end up doing very well. So it's sort of finding that place the same way finding a place in any other type of, you know, business or industry you would.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So tell us where we can find a Desk Hub location near us. Obviously, there's Scottsdale and San Diego. Where else are you now and where are you thinking about going?
So we've got 5 locations now. We are in Atlanta, we're in Scottsdale, we're in San Diego, we're in Portland, we're in Salt Lake City. We're continuing to look at sort of additional growth. We'll be adding an additional location in Phoenix very soon. We've also looking at some additional space on the West Coast and a couple of other cities, and also looking to grow in the existing markets that we're in as we start to sort of develop some brand and, you know, understand exactly, you know, where demand is and, you know, what different types of people want in different locations.
Great. And for anyone who wants to check out a Desk Hub in their city, where can they go?
You can go to our website at deskhub.com. That's deskhub.com, and check out the locations we've got. If we have a location somewhere that's good for you, shoot us a form and we'll get back to you, schedule you for a tour. And if we don't, shoot us a form anyway. Let us know where we think we should be.
Thanks so much for coming on, Jay.
Of course. Appreciate you having me.
For anyone that wants to give Desk Hub a try in their city, Jay's generously offering to give $100 off your first month. All you have to do is mention this podcast, Rocketship FM, and they'll get you set up.